1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And it's Joe at rte.ie. 51551 is our text number. Ken Cunningham. Ken, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, and yourself?
Very good, thanks. Very good indeed.
Okay, a little bit rattled, I suspect, by this letter that's going around, signed by your, purportedly signed by your solicitors company, Kenneth Cunningham, Newell and Cunningham, of Newell and Cunningham Solicitors in Waterford. The letter basically is in the form of a legal letter, so dear, in the language of a legal, dear business operator, owners, we brought to our attention that your business premises at, and there's an address inserted, has been operating a policy of excluding from entering said premises persons because they are not wearing face masks, despite in all cases they're informing your staff members they are exempt from wearing such face masks under the relevant legislation and attendant regulation. This is a serious matter, informing a systematic breach of the law, serious infringement of the civil and human rights of these individuals under the Constitution, European Convention on Human Rights. The relevant statutory instrument under the Health Act 1947, amended, is number 296/2020, and states inter alia. And then it goes on, it goes on, it goes on, and it basically says at the end, the which is always the first place you go to on a solicitor's letter, failure to uphold the law in this regard could result in civil proceedings being issued against you and your business. Yours sincerely, Kay Cunningham, Solicitor, South Parade, Waterford. That is not you.
That is not me. I am Ken Cunningham, Joe. I'm in partnership in a firm called Newell Gillen and Cunningham in South Parade in Waterford City. I have a business partner, Fiona Gillen. We have other associate solicitors, Leona MacDonald, Till Cunningham. No one from our firm has received any instructions from anyone associated with anti-mask. Thus, they would instruct our firm to take proceedings on their behalf. Curiously, it's my name only at the end of the correspondence, very much without my knowledge and certainly without my endorsement and certainly without the endorsement of the firm. So yes, it is a shock and it's not something that we're happy about.
And have you any idea how many businesses in Waterford have received this so-called legal letter?
Yeah, coincidentally, about a month ago, one of the fee earners in the office brought it to my attention that an existing client of our office had received this correspondence, purportedly signed off by me personally, suggesting that litigation would be taken against this retail premises if they didn't allow them in without wearing a face mask. I immediately reassured the client and explained it did not come from me. I don't know who it came from. I'm not aware of the provenance of the document. We did not stand over it. And I wish to reassure both the business owner and the client they had nothing to worry about insofar as I was concerned or Newell Gillen and Cunningham was concerned.
But for someone to get a solicitor, well, what reads as a solicitor, now it's pretty, it wouldn't be the best production, Photoshop production.
You know, with the highest of respect to whoever did draft it, it's poorly drafted. It's not the greatest piece of legal literature that you would come across.
Okay, but it's a long piece of legal. Whoever drafted it is likes writing.
They spent time. They did. And what really annoys me about the whole situation is the cowardice behind this. We are all in local business. Everyone is trying to stay afloat during the course of these pandemic restrictions. A lot of retail business in particular are struggling to stay afloat. And next thing they receive this correspondence, very threatening, without any question, very threatening, purportedly signed off by me. And I believe that it is mean-spirited and it's intimidating. And it's not something that should go without comment.
And it's nearly 2,000 words. I've just had a quick tabula. As I'm trying to get across to people, it's a long, long letter. And it would, if you weren't versed in the law, you would actually believe, you know, we request that immediate effect. You take steps to remedy these ongoing breaches of the law and of the fundamental rights of some of your customers. And in that context, issue without delay a directive to your staff and all such relevant persons under your authority, making clear that these, it's a long sentence, that these breaches of the law must cease, that your customers are not in future to be subjected to such unlawful, humiliating and discriminatory treatment. Failure to hold the law in this regard could result in civil proceedings. So you just want to make clear, this is not a letter from Cunningham Solicitors. As far as we know, it's not a letter from any solicitors. But what it's saying is, if you are implementing the government guidelines on masks and vaccinations, you are breaking the law, and that is not the case.
I want to make it very clear that no action will be taken on behalf of whoever it is that's behind this correspondence will be taken by our firm. I want to make it very clear to any local business, and I'm hoping that it is within the confines of the city walls of Waterford, if they receive such correspondence, to be reassured no action has been taken by me or our firm. And it's simply to reassure local business. This is a sneaky type of thing to do. Everybody is doing their best to survive during these very, very significant restrictions. And this is the last thing that a local business owner needs, threatening correspondence, which, as you said, would be treated with some anxiety. And more often than not, it is likely that if there was any confrontation between a business owner or their employees, that they are merely doing their job for the day and trying to keep everyone else safe. This is not a Ken Cunningham thing. It's not a Newell Gillen and Cunningham thing. My primary concern was that any local business that might receive this would have reassurance that there is nothing behind it insofar as our involvement is concerned.
Okay. Is there, insofar as you know, Ken, is there an anti-vax, a big anti-vax movement? In other words, if I go down to the, you know, that plaza between the church and an incredible bookshop, book centre, is it the book where you can go in?
Barnes Strand Street and Red Clear,
yeah. You can spend 4 days in that bookshop. It's incredible. Is there a camp, would it be people standing there that are giving out anti-vax leaflets or?
The honest answer to that, Joe, is I don't know.
Yeah.
I appreciate and I respect anyone's right to protest, and persons are entitled to protest against what they don't believe in. But you don't deal with it this way. You don't, as you said, prepare a two-page document or print off what appeared to be a two-page document, sign it off fraudulently in the name of a local solicitor who might be perceived to be somebody who's involved in a lot of court work, hoping that the message would be received. I don't think that's fair. It's not fair on local business. It's not fair on me. It's not fair on our firm. And I was very conscious to ensure that it will be clarified for everyone concerned.
Okay, well, and that's fully clarified. Kenneth Cunningham, thanks indeed. Kenneth is a solicitor in Waterford City. The full name of the practice again is
Newell Gillen and Cunningham Solicitors, South Grade, Waterford City.
And how have you managed?
If anyone receives any of these letters, Joe, I'm asking them to make direct contact with me.
Or put them in the bin. Okay, Ken, thanks indeed. That's Kenneth Cunningham in Waterford. Now, Megan Nichols. Megan, good afternoon. There's a couple of stories today and communication we've got which you could describe as people who've fallen through the cracks. Now, tell us your story, Megan, beginning, unfortunately, with the fact that is it both by the time you were 16, both your parents had passed? Okay, that phone line is so dreadful. Okay, I'll get Megan in a minute. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number, 1850-715-815.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT. I mentioned it just before Megan's phone line imploded, that a number of issues there about people who've fallen through the cracks. Now, Matthew Tiernan's family have contacted us. Matthew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's a really difficult situation that you found yourself in. It's the sting of it at the moment is that you can't get your wife vaccinated because she's at home. What has happened? Your wife is unwell.
My wife is housebound, Joe, at the moment, and she can't get out to get a vaccine.
Okay.
She's been sick for a couple of years, but she's housebound basically, and we can't physically get her to a vaccination centre. And we've told the HSE this on numerous occasions, and they still send us appointments for vaccines, even though we've told them that she can't be got there.
And why are they sending you appointments rather than I thought there was a protocol for the National Ambulance Service or GPs to visit people who
there is for the protocol finished at 70 years of age. Under 70 years of age, there's no protocol set up for anybody who is housebound at the moment, and that's the current situation. And we've been informed by the HSE, and they're basically fobbing us off at the moment.
And how is your wife's general health?
She's very sick, Joe. She has Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
but we don't want her to get COVID as well. Like, you know what I mean? we know where we stand, but...
And is she aware of this, or...?
No, not really. Not really, Joe, but we have carers coming in all the time, and I don't want her to get COVID, like...
How many carers do you have coming in?
I have 8 carers every day.
Every day?
4 times a day. Oh, I have plenty of carers, yeah. We've got plenty of carers. Oh, all right. I fought very hard for that as well.
No, but but that tells me how catastrophic the situation is.
Yeah.
Your wife is under 64. She has dementia, non-verbal, housebound, and relies solely on you and the carers.
Yes. And we can't get a vaccine for her.
And who have you contacted so far?
Everybody. Anywhere and everywhere. We've contacted a helpline, I don't know, many times. We've contacted our TDs. They can do nothing for us. So we're at our wit's end at this stage now. We've tried everything.
And could a GP, after all...
Yeah, they won't come out because they're not insured to come out, Joe. Because there's no protocol in place for the vaccine only. We've tried everything. The GP has tried everything. The HSE keeps fobbing us off to go to the GP, but it's not good enough. We can't do it. Because they can't do it. Because they haven't, one, they haven't got the vaccines to do it, and two, they haven't got the protocols to do it.
But you're saying it's insurance...
Well, it was one of them. It's every excuse under the sun,
bad, do it. But you're willing, from what you say, Matthew, and looking at the campaign, and your daughter's involved in it as well, to try and get your wife, who's seriously, seriously ill, the vaccination. If you're having 8 carers coming in every day, the best will in the world, that ups the chances, unfortunately, with the best will in the world.
Oh, it does, yeah, and it ups the chances. I have to be wary where I go as well, because it ups the chances when I go.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was, if somebody wanted a letter from you saying, I fully and totally understand that someone coming into my house could to administer a vaccine, and I wish to stay clearly, it is me who asked for this to happen. It is the representatives of my wife. In other words, to indemnify or exonerate anyone who comes in.
Oh, yeah, we're willing to do anything like that, yeah.
I knew.
It's nothing to do with insurance on our side. It's to do with insurance on the HSE side. They won't allow the doctor to come into my house at the moment because there's no protocol set up for it.
And when was Nolene diagnosed with dementia?
Oh, 5 years ago and next month.
So she was quite young. She was in her 50s.
Yeah. She was a member of the Garda Síochána and a member of the Garda band as well. So.
Oh, God.
So it's a struggle, Joe, to get anything out of the HSE, let me tell you. I heard you going on about the carers there a while ago. It's a big struggle on that.
The HSE said yesterday, we can't get carers.
You can't get carers because you won't pay them, Joe.
Yeah. I know. I was looking at some of the rates this morning. They're jaw-droppingly low. They really are. They really are. And in terms of the medics that Nolene has been and you have been in touch with, I presume there's been medical examinations, interventions, diagnosis, prognosis over the last few years.
Yeah, but you see, Nolene is in a grey area at the moment because we don't need medication or we don't need doctors as much as we used to. She's under our GP, and we liaise with our GP all the time, and he has done our best. He has done everything. She's approached the ambulance service, everything. We simply can't get a vaccine.
And when you say that there's no medical intervention needed at the moment, do you mind me if I put it this way? Is that because no medical intervention would make a difference?
Yeah. There's nothing you do for Alzheimer's.
I know.
We can't medication. If we could get medication or doctors to fix it, we would.
Yeah, but you can live for many years with Alzheimer's.
Correct. She could live for years. And she has lived for years. And she could live for more years. Plenty more years.
And has she lived longer than people thought?
Yes.
So someone said to you, given that Nolene, whatever, the background, 59 or late 50s when she got it, the prognosis time-wise isn't great.
The prognosis time-wise isn't great, but that doesn't mean...
Absolutely.
Where we are, the grey area. There's no medical science where we are. Nolene could live for another 10 years.
Yeah, please God.
Another 20 years. She could outlive us all, Joe.
Yeah. Oh my God! And such a competent woman, a member of the Garda Síochána, a member of the Garda band. That's some skill on both levels. Is an ambulance an option?
No, not really, because how do you get her in and out of the centres and everything then? So it's not an option. Nothing is an option at the moment other than for them to come and do it. That's the simplest way ever for everybody.
Yeah.
But as I said, there's no protocol set up. We were told there was no protocol set up, and when the protocol was set up, we'd have it. It'd be organised, and that was 3 months ago.
And then the vaccine rollout has been so successful.
Correct.
And so far...
But no, he's not the only one in this situation, Joe. There's thousands of people housebound who are in the same boat under the age of 70.
Are they okay?
It's not just us. It's a.
Yeah. Well, we understood that a protocol for the under 70s was introduced in a circular on July 26th last, and we've asked the HSE for clarification.
Well, the HSE basically telling you lies because we have tried everything. We cannot get a vaccine delivered to my house to be issued to Nolan.
Okay. We have no response. We've sought clarification from the HSE. Brendan Quinn is a pharmacist, aren't you, Brendan?
Hi, Joe. I am indeed, yeah.
And
I'm a vaccinated pharmacist.
And now I hear your voice. You're a pharmacist in Galway, are you? Is it Galway?
yeah, okay. Despite the voice.
Yeah, okay. I don't know every pharmacist in the country, but I know you. If any pharmacists I know, they're brilliant. But tell us, Brendan, one of your customers fell.
Yeah, and I'm not going to name any names, we had a very unfortunate incident for a very kind and decent woman who does a lot of community work, and she was booked into me due a vaccine at about 5:45 p.m., which was very helpful because she was last on my list that day.
Okay.
She couldn't make it in. Now, when we were training for the flu vaccines previously, we were told, and the same thing applies to the COVID vaccine, that in the course of your training, if you can provide the necessary equipment, the necessary environment, and are happy with conditions that you will be subjected to are okay to proceed, you can visit and do a vaccine. In fact, you can do a group of vaccines. So part of my planning would have been, for example, if I had a community group or a workplace where you wanted to go in and visit, or, for example, even a nursing home, you could make sure the place was safe, go along and give the vaccine. So that's exactly what I did in this case. In this case, there was only one person, and it's a bit more tricky with COVID because of the expiry dates. It's very short expiry dates. But it's not completely impossible because the vaccines last for about 6 hours. In fact, they last for exactly 6 hours in the case of Pfizer when it's diluted.
Okay.
And that's at room temperature. So if I complete my other 5 doses within the hour, I've got 4 hours or so safely to get to someone's house and give that dose. So I would say... Is there any pharmacists out there who feel the same as me and is only too willing to go and visit this lady? God knows, if I was in Dublin, I'd drop one up to her straight away.
And that's what you did. When that woman phoned in, her family said she's after breaking her ankle, sprained her ankle, you jumped in the car.
Jumped in the car, went out to her after it was closing up on a Saturday evening, went to her house, patted the dog and had a cup of tea afterwards, made sure she was safe and sound. And she got fully vaccinated as a result. And I'm only too willing to do that to anyone.
And what if pharmacists be... In that case, it was an emergency. Well,
No, and there was no way I was going to, number one, waste a dose, and number two, see a person who's so decent in the community go without her vaccine, because she needed it in the course of her work. There are other people that think the same as me that would say, you know what?
So you're saying a pharmacist, you doing that didn't break any protocol, didn't violate
indemnity. No, there's no issue. You're still, I suppose legally, you're in the workplace, you're carrying out the duty of your workplace. So I don't feel in any way compromised doing that. As long as the environment I'm visiting is relatively safe, and that's the judgment call you have to make.
Of course,
And of course, this is really intended to be for us visiting, any group of people that might not be able to travel or that might want something done as a group. That could be a nursing home, it could be a community group or even a workplace. To facilitate workplace. And it does happen, let's face it. I mean, the medical community regularly would visit a workplace or a nursing home to do a mass vaccination on the day. And do I not remember the phrase "nobody's going to be left behind" being quoted over and over again when the over 70s, yeah, when it was all starting? So let's get our proverbial backside in gear on this one and get this lady vaccinated and anyone else who is left behind.
Okay, so Matthew Tiernan, without giving me an exact, what part of the country are you in?
Drogheda,
okay.
But you see, that option wasn't offered to us, Joe, so the HSE aren't offered that option.
Okay, no. Yeah, okay. Miriam.
I had understood that there was an ambulance service was providing the service in some areas. No, I may be wrong.
No, apparently that's discontinued because they're just so busy with their, as we heard last week, with their general work. Miriam. Your husband has MND, living housebound. How did he get on and you get on with the vaccine?
Well, the first one, AstraZeneca, he got, I think it was in April, and we, how are we going to get him there was the first thing. Eventually the GP came through for me and gave me the number for the Order of Malta, who are very good. They're willing, and it's a good thing for people to know, they're willing to bring people to not just to hospital appointments, to other appointments as well. So to bear in mind, if they don't have another option for transportation, the Order of Malta is willing to do it. So anyway, we brought him to Beaumont that way, and I mean that was a whole thing as well, because he couldn't actually go into the vaccination centre because they didn't have a lift for a stretcher. But anyway, they ended up doing him in the corridor, which was grand. Then 14 weeks later, he needs his second dose, and to be honest, at that stage, he wasn't in a position to go by ambulance anymore. And I called everywhere, I tried everything. I eventually got through to the vaccination centre in Beaumont, and they escalated it, and they were still in the process of trying to solve the problem. But, you know, we were kind of running out of time, so my GP went outside of the box, and he came to the house and gave him a Pfizer as a second dose.
Okay.
Well done. You know, well done.
Yeah, exactly.
Well done to that GP.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I just wonder, will that liberate a few people, Matthew, what Brendan has said and what Miriam has said, just to...
Well, all we want to do is highlight Joe at the moment and see what happens.
Yeah, but we also want to get the vaccine for Nolene.
Correct. Yeah. We're trying to do that, and we've been trying that since the portal opened for our age
especially
group.
Especially as there's so many carers, and with the best will in the world, is they're coming in and out, and they're going to other houses as well, obviously.
Correct.
So I just read there that a lot of the pharmacies are now giving Pfizer, and my pharmacist would have been willing to come down and give him, you know, a vaccine had he had it. So that may be another option for the gentleman whose wife has Alzheimer's.
Yeah, we like the phrase, pharmacists love to find solutions.
That's Brendan.
That's me, Brendan, again, sorry. There has been a bit of a supply hiatus between the running out of the old Janssen one-shot vaccine and the new supply of Pfizer, which is probably going to hit most pharmacies tomorrow. So supply is going to be high again in the coming weeks.
Oh, great,
so
great,
do
great.
Check with your pharmacist, because pharmacy does like to find solutions. That's what we discuss every time we meet.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Brendan Quinn, pharmacist. And again, Brendan, thanks to all the pharmacists who are doing incredible work. They've really risen to the occasion. Not that that surprised many people, because they always do, and their staff, their wonderful staff. Miriam, thank you. Matthew, let's see what happens this afternoon. Let's see, will someone come forward? You're in the Drogheda area. Your wife contracted her dementia, arrived as it does, uncalled for, unwelcome, into so many households. And she's been housebound now for 4 or 5 years, and she needs the vaccine for all the obvious reasons. Matthew Tiernan, kind regards to you, and indeed Nolene, and thank her for her service in the Garda Síochána, and thank you for your service as a carer as well, Matthew. That's Matthew Tiernan. I mentioned the carers and the HSE saying they can't get any. Mary Ann has been on. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, what was your reaction when the HSE said we can't get carers?
Well, specifically home carers. And I was kind of a bit shocked. I work for a company in the northeast here of the country, and there's several companies running home care services. And we kind of seem to get a little bit forgotten, especially during the pandemic, which we've worked like crazy. I mean, you talk about hospitals and nursing homes and all that, but you have us people going in, you know, in the morning time, getting someone up, washed, dressed, showered, fed. We look after their personal care to assist families. And I mean, in all fairness, I've been doing this for the past 10 years. Since the crash, I had to take a change of direction and went back to college and restudied VTAC 5, etc., etc. So I love my job. I didn't think I'd stick it because it's not for everybody. It's a very, very tough job, Joe. It's tough on the old body, lugging and lifting and what have you, clients. And you also have, it's hard on the old mind as well, because you're in there and you're with regular clients and they have all their little problems and issues. And like that lady, Alzheimer's, I work with them. I work with, you know, MS patients as well as the elderly, the frail people. But I, speaking on myself and behalf of all my colleagues and anyone else that works as a home care assistant, the pay is just, it's dreadful. You know, it has been proven through the pandemic we've worked. Unfortunately, back in the beginning of the year, I managed to catch COVID, thank you very much. And I avoided it all last year. But it left me out of work for a few months. I'm still not 100%, but I'm a worker. I go back to work. I do what I have to do because we have to pay the bills at the end of the day, Joe. You know, they don't stop coming in the door. But, you know, with all the will in the world, a company will try and give you incentives and stuff like that, you know. But at the end of the day, we just want a decent week's wages. My hours are roughly about 4.5 to 5 hours a day at the moment. I want a basic 39-hour week. That's all I'm looking for.
What is your day? What is your daily routine, your daily schedule?
My daily routine, I'd come out in the morning for about 8, 8:30 to a couple of clients at the moment. I would have a mid-morning break because I have very few clients right now. So I'd probably get home for a bit of breakfast about 11 o'clock. I'd have to come back out then for a couple of calls around lunchtime. And then I have another break and I go back out in the afternoon to do another client. And then there are girls and men that come out in the evening time and do back to bed runs. Now, as I said, at the moment I have only about 4.5, 5 hours. And you only get paid for those calls. You don't get paid for sitting around. You know, I'm out at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm finished 4 o'clock. I don't get paid for that duration.
Okay.
If, for argument's sake, a client gets sick and goes into hospital, that comes off my rota. I don't get paid. The same if they go into respite for a break for the family, which they all need. That comes off my rota. I don't get paid.
So there's no retainer, no...
No.
Okay,
no.
And do you want to tell me how much you get paid for a 30 minute?
My hourly rate is roughly around, I think it's 12.10, 12.30 an hour. But that is only if you have an hour call. If you have a 30 minute call, you get paid €7. Now, you can imagine going in and getting an elderly, frail person up in 30 minutes in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, for €7, you know.
But you can't turn around and say, actually, it took me an hour.
Well, we do. So in some cases, we have gone over our time.
No, but you can't turn around to your boss and say, actually, that call is not a 30-minute call. It's an hour-long call. I want, God, the figure. My God, 12. What'd you say, 12:30?
Yeah. Like, it's not even the current living wage, I don't think. No. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's proven that we are needed. It's a job that's needed. Where the HSC are saying that they can't get carers, I can understand pay-wise, but bear in mind, the HSC carers, they get paid more than we do.
Okay.
Working for another company, right? Yeah. But they're going to go outside the EU to wherever and recruit, for less money, for buttons. Why don't they poach me? Why don't they approach us? I mean, I work with nurses in the community. So, I mean, you'd be in conversation with them. And, I mean, if they were to put the word out and say, look, we're looking for carers here, there, or wherever, surely to go. I mean, all I want is a 39-hour week, Joe. I can't afford to live. Do you know what I mean? The rent,
absolutely.
The pay for the car, and then your other bills, etc., etc. Do you know? I'm not looking for much.
Because you need a car, you've got from A to B. I have no choice.
I understand.
Do you get a car allowance or mileage or?
No. Our company doesn't pay it. Some companies do pay it. Our company doesn't.
That's pretty straightforward answer. You don't get mileage, you don't get a car allowance. No. And Marianne, can you be phoned? Okay, you say some people get sick and that's your hard luck. But can you be phoned at short notice to say, can you do a call?
Well, we do get short notice calls. We get a short notice call to say someone's going into hospital and it's straight away it's taken off your rota. Yes, you could get a short... I mean, they used to hound us during holidays. We kind of had to put a stop to that because, I mean, you're entitled to your break and your day off and your holidays. But, yes, you can get a phone call, say, OK, we've got this client in such and such an area. Can you fit her in or him in, whatever, you know? And you're waiting for that phone call to come back and that phone call doesn't come back. And we're saying, well, where did that call go?
Yeah.
You know,
you're on standby in that sense.
It's good as on standby. Yeah, you're like, to me, it's a zero contract. I don't have a contract. I don't have a contract saying up a minimum of 20 hours or 30 hours or 40 hours. I've nothing like that. Nothing. So, I mean, if I was young enough to go for a mortgage, sure, I wouldn't get one.
But would you go? Your conditions would be better in this working for the state in the HSE.
It is possible. Like, I am qualified to work in a hospital or work in a nursing home. Right. Yes, I am. But I choose in the community because I enjoy that. Because you can get a bit of crack with people. You can go in, cheer them up for the day. They mightn't see anyone else. You know, that sort of thing. I enjoy it. I don't... Like, where are the HSC advertising for staff?
Yeah, from what you say, carers, home carers, all carers at home as well are lifesavers. They really are.
It's giving. Like, it's not for everyone, Joe. It's not an easy job.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to be appreciated. Our clients appreciate us. But you get to wonder, come on, like, you see your pay packet at the end of the fortnight and it's like, oh my God, my rent is coming out, my car is coming out, and that's it gone. You know, you don't see a whisper of it. So, I mean, I think they need to look after the staff that they have. Pay them what they're worth, you know.
I'm not advocating this, and it's not in your DNA either from what you're saying. But would you be better off on the dole? On job seekers?
Yeah, I have said those words. I have actually said those words. Now, I'm working since I left school at the age of 17 after my leaving cert.
Well done. Well done.
I've always worked. It was in our ethic to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, yes, when I was actually sick that time on the pub, I said to myself, listen, that's all I want. Give me $3.50 a week, I'll be happy. Do you know, imagine saying that.
Excuse me.
And you're still struggling, you know, but okay, you've nowhere to go because you're locked down and what have you. But, you know, you're there, you're in the real world. Everything else is going up. Your gas, your electric, your food is going up.
Yeah.
The wages are just static, you know. And I think it's across the board in Ireland. Even, like, as I said, I worked in the hotel industry in my former life. You know, even in that hotel and catering industry, you know, the bad pay. You know, I think it's about time.
And that was, we didn't get to do it last week, Marianne, because other things intervened. But we had a slew of calls. You know, this whole idea from, I know it was proposed by people before profit, saying we need 4 more bank holidays. And the reaction we got was from hospitality staff.
Yeah.
We are sick, sore and tired of working bank holidays when no one else is working. But anyway, I know it's a complicated argument, but people sometimes forget that. Okay, Marianne, I won't say thank you for your service because it's in your DNA, but I think you've remind people again of your payment for a 30-minute call to a house where you could be lifting someone in and out of bed, you could be toileting them, you could be, and you're chatting to them as well and trying to give them a little
physical
lift and a mental lift.
Yeah. Well, it's €7 is the going rate at the moment for a 30-minute call, in general.
And for 45 minutes?
It's 3/4 of the hourly rate, so whatever that is, 8-something. 3/4 of the hourly rate, I think that's how they calculate it.
Oh, God.
You know,
okay.
So, yeah, it's great.
Okay. Marianne, look after yourself. Are
Thanks
you, are
very
you
much,
over
Joe.
The, are
Take
you
care.
Over the COVID now? Are you...
Oh, well, I'm still struggling, but sure, I'm getting there.
Did it knock you for six?
It certainly did.
Did it?
For sure.
Oh, God.
Certainly did.
Okay. Okay, fair play to you, Marianne. God bless you. Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks. That's not enough to say to someone that does incredible work for that for so little remuneration. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Newtown Mount Kennedy is where Tara Hammond is based. Tara, we obviously were aware of cyber attacks since the HSE. Your business has been attacked. What have they done, Tara?
Hi, Joe. How are you? Thanks
Good.
For having me on.
Yeah.
We got a phone call there about 2 months ago from a man claiming to be from Google who wanted to adjust our address on Google My Business.
Okay.
I realised it was a scam call, so I hung up. But unfortunately, they managed to change it, and we can't change it back.
They change it from what to what?
So we're down in Newtown Business Park in Newtown Mount Kennedy, and okay. Now the official listing says that we're in Bagot Street in Dublin.
Oh, for God. And that's a big, big change. How does it affect you? How does it...
Well, for example, yesterday we had a customer who rang who was wondering if she could call in and collect purely because she worked on Bagot Street, to which I had to explain that we're in Newtown Mount Kennedy.
And how,
they're not exactly beside each other.
They sure ain't. And how do you get out of Bagot Street, so to speak?
How do we which?
How do you get out of Bagot Street?
We've tried removing it numerous times. We've contacted Google and it just doesn't change.
But what do these hackers want?
They sent us an email looking for Bitcoin.
Good God. To change it back
that
to...
That only happened to big people.
To change it back to...
Change it back to Newtown, Mount Kennedy, yeah.
Have you ever come across anything like... And did they say how much Bitcoin they want or the value of the Bitcoin that they want? So, but
they changed they wanted to engage in a conversation, so naturally I didn't.
So but tell us about your company while I have you on then.
So we're called Slated, slated.ie.
Okay.
We're a family-based business.
Okay.
We started 10 years ago. It's myself and my husband.
Okay.
He's a slater by trade, and we've kind of like just turned his trade upside down a bit, and we create artisan tableware and home accessories.
So what's a slater?
So everything's made from slate.
Bear with me. What's a slater do? You say what you say.
Slater
he's a,
on roofs.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is a pretty important skill.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're just using it in a different way now.
And so he's using slate. So you both of you are using slates.
Yeah. So
to create,
my husband cuts all of the pieces. So we make cheese boards and candle holders, and we also personalise them. So we do a lovely deep carve on the boards as well.
And where do you source your slate?
Our slate comes from Spain because the Spanish have the best slate.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
And what happened to Liscannor slate? Is that gone?
It's a stone, so
okay.
I could sound like a slate nerd now, but it's too thick as well for what we use it for. So ours is kind of a special grade.
Well, I know where I can't get your product. That's in Bagot Street.
Yeah, you can't get it in Bagot Street.
And you call yourself?
Slated.
Slated, okay. And that's what we're doing with those shower of messers are after robbing your address or giving you a new address against you. We'll slate them. And where can people see or buy your product?
They can pop onto our website, slated.ie, and they can order direct from ourselves there, and then they can see the full range.
Okay, and are you in any shops, given that we're trying to encourage people to go and shop?
Well, we do have selected stockists in Ireland, like Louis Mulcahy down in Kerry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
BTs? Do you do BTs?
We used to be with Brian Thomas, a couple of years ago.
And why aren't you with them now?
Well, stock changes and, you know yourself, shops have to keep everything updated.
Okay, do you want to be with Brown Thomas again?
Well, at the moment, we're just kind of concentrating on
online, purely
because of the
Not that I can get you into
situation.
Brown Thomas. I can get you to the get you to the front door past Jimmy, isn't the wonderful maitre d' there on the door, but that's as far as I can get you into BTs. But it sounds like is it just the two, yourself and your chap?
Yeah, and then our son is learning how to cut as well because we cut every piece by hand, you see, so it's quite an intricate method.
Just so unusual. Is your husband? No, there would be lots of qualified Slaters, would there?
Oh yeah, there is. There's lots. Well, he's from a family of like they're Slaters for the last couple of hundred years. So
he's from the Slater family.
Yeah, they're kind of a famous family for Slater. Are they? Yeah.
And what are they called?
The Hammonds.
The Hammonds.
Dawkey. Yeah. There's a lot of brothers and then a lot of cousins, and you know yourself.
And they were all Slaters.
They're all Slaters, yeah. Yeah. Okay. My father-in-law's brothers were all Slaters bar one, who became a tailor, and then his sons became Slaters.
Wow.
So, yeah. But then, do you know
when a family's called Slater? Like, there's lots of Slaters, isn't there, as a name?
There is, yeah. I'd say there probably is some connection.
Because we were doing a thing last week called, bear with me now, we're doing a thing last week, Tara, called nominative determinism. And that is when your name tells you what your job is. Are you with me? So if a Slater, if Mick Slater was a Slater.
Yeah.
Are you with me? Or if Mary Gallery ran an art gallery. Sorry, I'm rambling here now.
Or it's like the surname Merryman. That comes from the court jester.
Niall Hatch from Birdwatcher. Merryman is okay.
Yep.
I mentioned Garda Noel Slough, who's in charge of the speed Gardaí and the Gardaí at one stage. But anyway, just to say to people, that's slater.ie, am I right?
Slated.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's just, we'd love to be able to get our correct address, because at Christmas we'd like to be able to do click and collect for our customers.
Okay,
but we don't want them all to think that we're in the wrong place.
Okay, slated.ie are in Newtown Mount Kennedy. Google that name, you'll get it. That's your contact. You've no connection with Baggot Street, and you've no intention of paying these hijackers to take Baggot Street off your address. So we'll ask Google, should be doing it, shouldn't they?
They should. It'd be great if Google could do it. It'd be brilliant.
Okay, well done, Tara, and keep up the business. And I've just been shown some of your... Do you do design as well?
Yeah, so we do all different. So we like to kind of marry materials that suit the slate.
Okay.
Traditionally, so we use a lot of copper and things like that, and we do gilding and all, which is what I spent the morning doing. Actually, is doing copper gilding.
And you know the way some restaurants now have slates as plates.
Yeah, we deal with an awful lot of restaurants actually.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And all our products are food safe. So
yeah, what does that mean?
Well, we have certification for like FDA approval, and because we ship a lot into the States as well.
Okay, so in other words, nothing can seep out of the slate that will ruin your steak.
No, nothing will ruin it. No, it goes through a long process before it's all nice and shiny.
And how have you managed? Well, Spain is your source, so Brexit doesn't make a difference, thank God, does it?
Well, Brexit made a difference to us for sales, because we would have done a lot of sales, but we've temporarily suspended them.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, it's all very complicated, so we decided just to...
So you're not selling anything in Great
just
Britain?
Just Northern Ireland at the moment.
You're selling in Northern Ireland, of course.
Yeah.
But not Great Britain.
And the rest of the world.
Okay. From Newtown, Mount Kennedy, not from Baggot Street.
Yeah, but if we could manage to get that Google My Business fixed, it would be amazing.
Okay, Tara, you're amazing. Your family's amazing. Incredible. It's really important to keep that business going as well. It's so unique
in
the rich tapestry of life. Okay, Tara Hammond of slated.ie in Newtown, Mount Kennedy. Thanks indeed. Danielle, before the break. Danielle, you're in Waterford. You have a hair salon, Lloyd's in Waterford. We heard right at the start of the programme from Ken Cunningham saying, this letter that purports to come from his solicitor's office to businesses in Waterford, saying if you don't let us in without masks and without vaccinations, we're going to get Cunningham solicitors onto you. That's nothing to do with Cunningham solicitors. Danielle, what inquiries have you been getting?
Yeah, we've noticed a huge increase in inquiries on mask wearing, and we have a very strict mask wearing policy in our salon. And if we say no, look, unfortunately, our policy at the moment is 100% masks. You will get a lot of legalities quoted back at you straight off the bat. So as soon as I heard that this letter was circulating, I thought, oh, well, this must be where this is coming from. There's been a notable increase in the reluctance in mask wearing. We've noticed in our salon in the last couple of weeks, which is sad to see, because, you know, it's tough enough being in business. Salons, all business owners have had a terrible time, and they're delighted now to get back open. And it just brings an extra, I suppose, element of stress.
When you say they quote legalities, is it as if they're reading from a letter, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why it stood out. Yeah. We were like, that's very strange. You know, if someone sends a question, they go, am I now come in without wearing a mask? And we say, no, unfortunately, at the moment, our policy is 100% mask, they're team members, blah, blah, blah. They will immediately come back with a very, you know, kind of strongly worded.
Okay, do you know that under the Constitution, the European Convention of Human Rights, you are infringing the relevant statutory instrument under the Health Act 1947, et cetera, Section A? Are you getting that type of response?
Exactly.
Where it's coming from. Yeah. Okay. Okay. The anti-vax. Okay. Thanks indeed, Danielle. The Collective by Lies in Waterford. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I mentioned the cyber attack on the HSE when I was talking to Tara there, who's been attacked in small business, as if it was over. It's not over, unfortunately. And there are a lot of the emails are still down, one of them including the press office that we were unaware of. And there's now a new email address for the press office, which we've now been given. So apologies there for saying we didn't get a reply. They didn't get the email. And they're normally very, very prompt on the reply. So apologies there to the HSE press office. Now, Megan Nichols, I was mentioning earlier on about Damien and his wife falling through the cracks in terms of Matthew Tiernan and his wife falling through the cracks in terms of the vaccination. You have fallen through the cracks as well. What happened? It could begin when you were 16. I know you're not far off 16 at this stage. Tell us, Megan.
Well, when I was 16, my mother passed away, and okay. I kind of had to grow up because I was an orphan.
Okay. And then you wanted to go on to third level education. What happened?
I did, but I didn't have the qualifications. I had to go through the ETB. And after I finished that course and was 18, out on my own, I applied for the college.
Okay.
I got the course I wanted.
Right.
And I got the full rate from SUSE.
Okay. This is the state body for administering grants, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the ETB is the Education and Training Board. So they're all legitimate courses you were doing.
Yep.
Okay, so you got the SUSE grant.
Everything was going okay. The SUSE grant, when I moved up to Letterkenny for the college, was $650 a month, as I'd been on the ETB course. So that covered everything, just about. Left you scrimping a bit at the end of the month. But I was able to save some. Moving on down the line a bit, I got a bit of aid from the college because the $650 didn't cover everything.
Okay, and you were have you any other source of income, Megan?
Nope, I was purely dependent on that. I don't.
Okay.
Don't have anyone else I could call off.
You've no other assets or savings or.
No.
Okay. So you're living on $650 a month and little bit of help from the college fund or whatever. And what happened next?
Well, around November, I found out about a grant that they could offer students when they're first entering the colleges.
Okay.
This grant is for disadvantaged people, and I covered all the criteria for it.
Sure do.
But you could only apply before you enter the college, and you only ever hear anything about it if you're digging quite desperately for information, or if you end up going into the college asking for help and find something on it.
So where are you now? What's happening now that you've contacted us?
Well, over the summer, SUSE doesn't give out your grant. You're at the summer, so they expect you to have your parents take care of you.
So you've no parents?
Nope, I don't have any parents, and all I really had left was whatever I'd managed to save up. over the course of my college year.
From the meagre 650 that you're getting per month?
And 500 of it automatically gone in rent and bills.
Yeah.
Before I'd even fed myself or anything else.
And how do you feed you? Have you any source of income at the moment, Megan?
I don't. Okay. I am purely living off what I saved.
And you could not have saved a lot.
I didn't get to save a lot, no.
And how do you eat? How do you cover?
I have to go to the food banks. I've had to go to Letterkenny Food Bank more than a handful of times because I don't have the income.
Clothing.
I've had to go to St. Vincent de Paul.
And where do you rent accommodation?
That's only what I've been able to save. I've gotten a few graces from my landlord because he understands just how tough it is. I applied for the social welfare because I knew I needed some help, but you're not allowed to get it as a student.
Assume during the summer that the parents of the students, or parents or whatever, would...
Mm-hmm. They assume that you'll be taken care of.
And one of the other things to say is that students should, but I don't know how you do it, given the world that has collapsed. Megan, what about getting a job? As I say, but the number of jobs have decreased, but getting a job?
I've applied for jobs, but I've applied for roughly 30 jobs in this area.
Yeah.
And between wanting just full-time workers so they don't want a student who will leave after the summer.
In a few weeks, yeah.
And a lot of them are only temporary contracts. They just want to get through the summer boom. I even apply for them. It's still something.
And have you been offered any work?
I haven't.
And have you any, when they see your CV, is there any, no, you're still quite young, is there any experience on your CV that might help you get a job?
I have voluntary work in retail outlets and I also worked in a bookstore for a few years.
Well, that doesn't stand to you in terms of getting, have you had many interviews?
I've only had 2 interviews out of all of them.
And how many have you applied for in writing?
I have applied for 20 odd.
Wow.
I had to print off the CVs and I took them to everywhere just hoping for something.
And Megan, your mum passed away. Obviously she was quite young. Do you have any relations that might be able to help?
No.
Okay.
I'm on my own with everything.
You sound quite cast down, Megan.
Well, it is a rough situation, and I know I'm not the only one struggling through it. I feel like the government is heavily failing students because they take away the one aid that we do have, Susie, but then don't let us have anything else over the summer. We're not allowed welfare. We're not allowed job seekers. I've asked if there is an emergency fund because I couldn't pay rent and nothing.
You see, I made this point earlier and I don't like making it because people want to work in the main. But I made this point to Marianne about she's a home carer, €7 for her half an hour, €8 for 45 minutes, €12 for an hour, good God. Would she be inclined to sign on? Because if you stop, you said, no, I'm giving, don't, by the way, please don't. if you were to say, I'm giving up studying and went down the road and signed on, you would get paid. You would be entitled to job seekers, wouldn't you?
I'd get job seekers and I'd get rent allowance. I could sit at home, I'm not going to, but I could sit at home and get paid to do nothing. But because I try and better myself and get an education, I have to, you know, struggle.
And what happened to your mom, Megan?
She had an asthma attack.
An asthma attack? And how do you die from an asthma attack? Was she on her own or?
Yeah, she was a very heavy smoker and it happened overnight.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And were you living with her at the time?
I was.
Okay. And was that in rented accommodation?
It was in rented accommodation.
Yeah, so then that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Megan, stay with us. Please stay with us. I'll be back talking to you after this break.
No problem.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Megan Nichols, I'm talking to. Megan contacted us, and at age 16, her mother, who was her sole carer at that stage, died, as we just heard, from an asthma attack. Obviously, a very young woman. Megan was only 16, which effectively left her without parents. They were in rented accommodation, which effectively left her without a roof over her head. And she did get a Susie grant to go to college, and that worked out at €650 a month. But that's during the college year. €400 of that went on rent, which is, looking at rents around the country, is a pretty low rent you managed to get, Megan. So you shopped around, but I can't imagine the conditions. I'm sure the landlord was very good. A hundred on bills. And then she tried to save out of the €150 a month, I'm thinking of food and everything, and but she said she went to food banks. She tried to save 150, and that's basically what she's living off at the minute. How close are you to having a completely empty purse, Megan?
Very close. I'm struggling to think how I'm going to pay, you know, the rent at all. It's like,
And do your friends know?
They do, and
yes. Well, so you say you're not the only one in the situation.
I'm not the only one. Like, others are struggling too. I don't know what they expect students to do. Like, even if I had a family,
mm-hmm.
not all families can afford to just take on all the responsibilities of having another person to feed or. The summer, or having them stay at the college.
And a lot of people just assume, like, there's an ad on at the minute. I shouldn't say this, but there's an ad on at the minute where one of the participants, a husband and wife, and, you know, when we were 30, we reared a family, and then we were 40, we put them all through college. If only every family was so lucky. Put them all through college. It's an expensive operation.
Well, what's sad is Ireland in the EU has one of the highest rates of students going into third level education.
Which is what which is brilliant in itself. Education is brilliant. But also, it's one of the things we use to try and invite foreign investment into the country. This is how well we're doing. But anyway, go ahead. You're making a point about the EU.
But also in the EU, we're one of the most expensive countries to go to college in.
Yeah. And Megan, what's your you've told me your story from 16. What was your story before 16? Where were you born?
I was born over in Manchester.
Okay. And then when did your mum come to Ireland? Or is she from Ireland?
We came back over about when I was 8 or 9.
What was that like for you, leaving your pals behind?
It was quite a big change, and I did miss it a lot.
And have you? You've no siblings, I gather, from what you're saying.
No.
Okay. And who will you talk to this evening? Like, I presume you can't afford to socialise.
No. Even if I had work, having a social life would be really difficult in college term. This year, because you can't get welfare as a student, my Susie rate is going down to $350 a month.
Why?
Because you can only get the $650 if you're on social welfare when you apply.
Okay.
But you can't do that as a student.
And you're saying? Only for you have, as you say, it's in the... And then is there another thing that if you earn money over the summer, is it counted and deducted from your Susie grant? The Susie grant is means tested, isn't it?
It's mean tested within rates. If I earn over a certain amount, then yeah, I'm going to get even less again when I restart college. With the Susie, the 350, yeah, it's nice to have that little less worry, but you either have to work full-time to pull up the rest and miss your classes, which means you have a higher chance of failing. Or you work part-time and you can't afford to have a social life or do anything because you need to save up every cent.
And what is your... What is any relaxation time for you at the minute? Do you go walking? Do you go to the gym? Well, you can't afford a gym. What am I on about?
I just walk around the town, honestly, but it even gets stressful. Because I'm just trying to think of places like I can try and find somewhere. And it's harder when like you can't drive. You've never had the ability to get that far.
And Megan, have you anyone that can advocate for you?
Well, no, that's why I'm advocating for myself. And I'm advocating for the other people who don't feel like they can.
Yeah. It's a catch-22, but the catch-22 is not strong enough a description, because you're talking about living, basic living, that you can't afford.
The max you get in government aid, including what the college is given to hand out to students, is a max of $4,000 a year.
Okay.
Is the government really so out of touch with people that they think that's enough for anyone to live off of, let alone a student?
Well, you see, in one sense, they don't, because they... The PUP was 350, the job seekers as well over 200, much, much better than across the border there from where you are in Letterkenny. So the government believes that that's necessary. And as you say, if, and you won't, but if you decided today to walk down to the, or apply online to the unemployment office in our Department of Social Welfare in Letterkenny, say I've decided to terminate my course, I wish to apply for job seekers, you'd be much better off.
I would.
Okay, John Kelly. John, good afternoon. Joe at rt.ie, 1850 715 815, and 51551 is our text number. You're listening to Megan. Have you you've a couple of ideas?
Sorry,
you've a couple of ideas, I see. But
well, I'm not sure. You know, she probably has checked it up, looked it up herself.
Okay.
But she may have, but I'll say it anyway. There's a payment of called supplementary welfare allowance, which you're entitled to if you are not able to get another payment for some reason. Now I'm sure she's looked it up, but maybe she hasn't. But I just like to, you know, just say me. My heart goes out to her. Like, I mean, just hearing her story there is just, it's dreadful. I mean, and that loophole should be just closed, you know, as soon as humanly possible by the government, you know. But I don't know if she has checked that payments to see if she could get it. And she might be entitled to rent allowance as well.
I have tried supplementary. They also said that I wasn't entitled as a student.
And did you check Citizens Advice or Legal Aid or anything like that? No?
I've spoke to Citizens Information, and they couldn't think of anything additionally.
Okay, right. I was thinking you might have tried that. But would you think of trying FLAC, Free Legal Aid Centres?
And what's your next sentence? What are you thinking there, John? Are you thinking that you could take a case or?
I'm not sure about a case because I'm not sure what way the legislation is. But they might just they might have some idea, you know, around us. There's people in that are quite well versed in social welfare law, There's one in the Coolock Community Law Centre. The point of that may have changed, but if she looks up Coolock, I think it might be called now mediation law or family mediation law, but they deal with them queries and they get you a solicitor.
Is there, and Megan, don't answer this if you don't want to, because I don't know your full circumstance, but are you Are you legally an orphan, Megan, in terms of, are both your parents dead or do you have any contact?
I am legally an orphan in the eyes of the state.
And is there an orphan's allowance? I know that shouldn't be the name of it at this stage, but is there a survivor? But you say you've laid out your circumstances as you've laid them out here today, and I think it's very brave what you're doing. And you said you've gone to all the brilliant organisations like Citizens Information, and they say because you're a student, you're in this catch 22. That's a yes.
They have just said there's nothing I can do except work.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Citizens Information. If an orphan is attending a full-time education course, is age between 18 and 22. What age are you now, Megan?
I'm 20.
Okay. And is not living with or in the care of a guardian, the payment can be paid directly to the orphan. I just wonder... I just wonder, would that be an angle? And when you say your mother's, but when you say you are legally an orphan, how did you establish that?
I have no parent. Okay.
You have no parents listed. Yep. Okay. And would you think, I'm not advocating any of these things, but these are calls we're getting in, Megan, because you are touching people. In the true meaning of that word, you're really affecting people deeply, and that people are empathising so strongly. But you know I don't know if they work or not, do they? Why am I suggesting these GoFundMe pages? Is that would be too harrowing, wouldn't it?
Well, the orphans thing is, you talk there, Joe.
That's the only thing I can think of at this stage. If we went to...
Might be, and the legal aid people might have.
Yeah. Now, what we need to do is get a statement from the department. So getting somebody thinking about this, there's brilliant people in there.
Can't leave someone like that.
This is social welfare legislation. Provide this is a statement from the department that a person must satisfy the conditions of being available for and genuinely seeking work. In order to be entitled to Job Seekers Benefit Allowance, any person who fails to satisfy these conditions. Well, you see, Megan wants to stay in school. It's been a long-standing practice as students of full-time education are not eligible to receive a job seeker situation. However, there are a number of situations where payment may be made to students over the summer holidays. For example, the disqualification from job seekers does not apply in the case of mature student. You're not a mature student.
Not yet.
No, you're mature, but you're not classified as a mature student, which I think is over 25. During this period, a mature student, you're not a mature student, can apply for job seekers benefit allowance subject. The department does not comment publicly on individual cases, I understand. However, if Megan wishes to discuss their situation with an official, we will provide you with details at the end of the show. Is that okay, Megan? Have we got a name for you?
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to speak to anyone.
Okay. And how do you... Are you into music or dancing or are you into reading or...?
I absolutely love reading. It's actually one of my main escapes.
Okay, and what do you like reading?
Mostly fantasy or horror.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who would your favourite authors be? I know nothing about fantasy or horror. I'm sorry. I'm just brutal at that. Would you read a lot, Megan? Do you find it helpful?
I do. Great. It helps a lot.
Brilliant. We'll keep that up anyway. We're going to give you a name in about 5 or 10 minutes for you to ring, and we'll keep you up. We'll keep our listeners up to speed because you've deeply affected them with your story and your humility and at times your silence as well, Megan, spoke volumes. It really did about the humanity and what you've gone through. I'm so sorry. What was your mother's first name, Megan?
Julie.
I'm so sorry to hear about Julie. And what age was your mum when she passed?
She was only 36.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, Megan, I feel so many people feel for you. Megan Nichols, thanks indeed. We're going to be in touch very, very shortly. John Kelly and all, you were speaking on behalf of so many callers, John. Thanks indeed. Rebecca Meehan producing. Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.